Hello and welcome everybody to Around the Battleground. My name is Alex Chess and I am your host as always. Today, joining me on the show, a guy we've had a couple times at this point, I think. Friend of the show, another one of our coaches, another installation in our coaches series. I think he's like one of the last ones we have to hit. We've got Slaney, the new coach for Rival. How you doing?
I'm doing good, thank you. Thank you for having me. Yeah, it's been a couple times now. Always a joy to be here, so happy to be back.
Yeah, this has been a long time coming. Between technical difficulties, being egoed, just plain forgetfulness. it was a long road to get back here, but
yeah, sorry about that.
No, it's all good. Like it's been crazy. I don't think a lot of people really realize like the amount of effort that's really going in to season six. Just from my perspective, trying to like get people for interviews leading up to the start of the season has been really hard between people moving all the time, getting everything established down in Atlanta, and then just all of the craziness between scrims. Apparently everybody is scrimming like madmen right now too, and that's just like confounding everything.
Yeah, definitely. It's super crazy. Like half of our team is moving continents. And I'm kind of like having to like leeway information between people for it. And I'm like, so I'm organizing not only my visa, but I'm organizing Kenny's and Ben's as well. So it's just like craziness all over the place. And then on top of like having to get ready for the house kind of stuff. So, and then obviously, like you said, we're scrimming loads. So just loads.
Has this been the most hectic, chaotic off season that you've experienced so far?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. Even last year, it took me a while to get picked up, and that was way less stressful than all of this is. So yeah.
I can imagine. I mean, last year was interesting too, because it was such a different experience with the franchise and everything. But even then, like, all of that's turned up this year. Like, even if you had a spot, it's like, oh, well, I have to move.
Yeah. Fuck. If it was on like a 6 last year, it's on like a 14 this year.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. I think it'll be worth it though. It's definitely going to be a really good experience, regardless of like how the team performs or anything, even though I'm very hopeful for it. I think it's going to be a great year, and I think Hyros are going to do a really good job just with like all the content they're going to produce. I don't know how much of it is like allowed to be publicly known, but there's definitely a lot of cool stuff in the works.
Yeah, I believe it. I mean, I tried to reach out to some Skillshot staff for, you know, interviews, talking to them and stuff, and like across the board, all I got was, nah, bruh, we're too busy. Yeah. Putting a shit ton of stuff together. Maybe once like the season starts, but even then, like, content is going to be being pumped out. And so at the time, I didn't know about all the D&D stuff they were doing and all the stuff that kind of on the off season that they're really trying, which was cool. But like, they've got a lot of stuff coming out. They just released that splice doc, and I think we're going to get a bunch more of those kind of mini docs throughout the season, which will be cool.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be super cool to see what they do with everything.
Yeah, I'm really excited to kind of witness the format for the LAN and everything. Like, they just also announced too with the console league that they'll be like at the milestones throughout the year, console could play PC. Yeah. And that's either going to be a shit show or really cool. I don't know which one yet, because I'm friends with like, I'm inbound Bobby, right? Like, I'm friends with him. He's a good player, but at the same time, it's like, last time PC played console didn't go that great for console.
Yeah, PC kind of just won the world championship that year, huh?
Just a little bit. But console's improved a lot.
Yeah, definitely.
The Xbox kids have really fought to like break away from that initial like look down on them status.
Yeah,
I mean, they still kind of do get egoed and bodied still, but it's as crazy to see a box kid come to PC anymore.
Yeah, I mean, Sino was a box player, so
yeah,
now he's a MVP world champion, so yeah, it's gonna be interesting to see. But I think the first team that loses to console might be on suicide watch, so
maybe
keep close eye on them, make sure they're okay when that happens.
Five bucks says it's a weakened team. I mean, weakened's kind of like he's memes. The first one to drop a game to LATAM too, right? LATAM,
yeah, Worlds as well.
Weekends just wants to like further everybody, right? So he did it for the LATAM and the international community. Now he's going to come back and
he did it to SML as well, right?
I think he gave the SML, their first big win. Oh, good guy, Kurt.
Yeah, he's actually a really good player. I think he gets way more hate than he deserves.
I would absolutely agree.
I think he's just easy to dislike. I think he tries, maybe he doesn't do it on purpose, but I think he's good at making himself the villain. So
yeah, he definitely rolls into that. I when I first got into Smite was like back in season 3, so I really remember like that first year of competitive, and like the biggest thing that really happened was that whole Incon versus Weekend thing on the roster. Yeah. And I really vividly remember how like that fucked up the community for like a couple months. Like, I remember when it got like, because it was the craziest thing I'll never forget. It was like that roster change at one point led to beef being started between DM Brandon and Duke Sloth. And that always blew my mind. How did we get from this to that?
Yeah.
Like, it was all just on this one event. It was crazy. But I was on Team Incon side because I was like a little normie pleb and I didn't really fully understand everything. I love you, dude, but you got a certain demographic on your side in that fight. And so I had Kurt come on the show and I started talking to him and I was like, holy shit, like I love Kurt. Like he's one of those guys where like if he has a problem with you, he'll just tell you.
Yeah.
And like that's really refreshing. Like he just will talk shit to your face, but like also like have fun with you at this, like, you know what I mean? Like, and then if you try to like the whole 667 thing, like he's turned that into like a whole brand for himself now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That takes a skill that I really do appreciate him.
I think he's one of those people that is like, if he respects you, he's like a really, really good guy. Like I haven't had that many interactions with him. I've played a few casuals with him here and there, but he's always actually really enjoyable to play with. He's he'll like hype you up when you need it. It's cool. I think he's a really cool guy.
Like, I took a trip. We were working, I was working at a company and then I was like bringing him in for some consulting stuff and we went out somewhere and me and him were just hanging out the whole time. And it was just like such a, like a goofy dude, really, if you get to know him. It was like going at Worlds, like not Worlds, the placement rounds leading into Worlds. My favorite thing was just following old man Kurt interacting with Bobby and Hythe and like all these meme board shit posters, and then like them teaching Kurt how to shit post. Like that was more enjoyable than like 90% of everything else going on at that point.
Can imagine.
So I guess we should talk about last year, but before we kind of get into that too, I kind of really I've been trying to focus on the different coaches in the scene. We've talked to Alpha Jackal. We've talked to Kabam. We've talked to a few people at this point now, and really trying to distill down like what got you to this point as a coach, what drew you to coaching and everything like that. And like, what has your experience been through Smite that got you here?
Well, I had started playing Smite since like before Gwent release. I was watching a stream from a YouTuber that I liked, and there was like 10,000 people watching him, and he gave away one beta code, and it was just back when it was like super private beta, and I managed to get it somehow. And I just played through Smite just like casually throughout like the year. And that's when everyone started kind of like making these random like teams with, you know, that's like when just, you know, random teams, and then random tournaments started popping up. And I was playing in them. I never like was incredible or anything, but I don't think anyone was back then. Kind of did that for a couple years like everyone else. Then obviously the launch tournament kind of got it bigger and bigger. And then I was kind of big in the German community. I had a lot of friends there. You wouldn't have heard any of them, but they're like Lennox, Reval, Tattleson. They were all like the biggest German players back then. And we had formed a team and it was going really well. But I was getting really burnt out from Smite, and this was around like the Sylvanas release. And I took a break for a couple months in that Sylvanas time. And then they ended up picking up Jermaine for a team called the Broncos. And this was in Challenger Cup when Epsilon, or like Panthera back then, were in the Challenger Cup. And we were second seed. And obviously they ended up winning the Challenger Cup. So we kind of disbanded as a team. But I was coaching for that team. And then after I started coaching for that team, because I got put to sixth, I just kind of like hopped around really small minor teams that didn't really do anything and just hung around the German community. And during that time, I got kind of close to Funball, who was on Paradigm at the time. I got pretty close with him. And then obviously after all the Paradigm and Orbit drama, Trig Esports, whatever that was, all that drama, they ended up replacing Deza. And then I joined Enix, which was, or Valiant Squadron originally. And then that moved to Enix. And then that's where I started my proper coaching career, was through that. And then I just, after Enix, I went, well, before Enix, I was like partially on Obey, but they had Hazer. But they tried me out. But Hazer was just, had asked before. So yeah, that's kind of like where it started out. A bit all over the place. But
is that like public knowledge? I don't think I've ever heard you were like with Obey for a bit.
Or
like,
it wasn't, it
like talk, it was, like fired or whatever. Like that's, yeah. I like, as far as I knew, it was like always Hazer. Like,
yeah, it was basically always Hazer. Yeah. I was only there for about a week. Nate just wanted to see, because I had spoken to Nate and let him know that I was interested. And Nate was like, yeah, that sounds cool. And then he came back to me like a couple weeks later saying, like, we really respect you talking to us about it. But Hazer has experience, because that was when he was on Cyclone. Mm-hmm. He had left Cyclone to go to Obey. It's like, well, he has experience already, so we just kind of have to go with him just out of experience alone. And then that was going well with them. And then a couple months after they got Hazer had to go somewhere for a few weeks. And Nate was like, well, we might as well just see how Slaney does in those few weeks. It was never even like me potentially taking over Hazer's job. I was never like given that impression, and I never thought that. But that was a fun few weeks. I remember a story with Variety. In the first game, he got destroyed in lane. So the next game, he mutes, doesn't talk in the entire game. The next game after that, he insta-picks Kronos without saying anything, and he's still muted. And this is in scrims, hasn't said a word. And then gets destroyed in lane. Then the next game, he insta-locks Thor, gets soloed in the first 2 minutes, and then rage quits. And then doesn't come back for scrims. That was the first time I'd ever met Variety, and it was such a funny night of scrims. I'll never forget it. That was like my first real time coaching and having issues. It was great.
Great.
Great. Wonderful.
All right. And then from Obey, like, well, Enix, yeah, and then the little Warrior in Obey was Noble, right? And you kind of, yeah, you took that them was from last to possibly being a dark horse going to Worlds, right? If I remember that,
yeah,
correctly.
Yeah, we went to Super Regionals, and no one had expected us to. I think we had, like, across the board been predicted to finish 8th. Like,
yeah,
maybe even lose to the SML team, and then we ended up sweeping the... We actually played really well in the Gauntlet, I think it was called, the Spring Gauntlet, whatever it was, to the Super Regionals. Yeah, we ended up doing really well there. And then we didn't win at Super Regionals, but I still think we did better than most people expected. We actually had them very close. Like, we had good early games against a lot of teams and good mid games. It's just, like, late game, we just kind of fell apart. I think Noble was the tipping point for... I think if Noble hadn't gone so well, I would never would have gotten to be on CLG. Obviously, Fine was actually on Noble. Fine OK was on Noble for a bit after the offseason. That was with Neilmar as well. I don't think that was ever public, but it was... we had Neilmar and then Fine OK... and then obviously I'd worked with Fine for a month or so in that off season.
I think that was public, because I remember that was like when Wubbin decided to go to the Air Force,
yeah,
and retire. And then like there was, because that was the conversation, is like then Neilmar was going to replace him, and everyone was like, oh, this is 1000% upgrade. And I remember having to like die on the hill that like, no, Wubbin's an idiot, but he is good at Smite.
Yeah.
Like I remember having to fucking die on that hill.
Yeah.
And like getting memed on for having an opinion.
But yeah, thankfully me and Fine got along pretty well on Noble. And then he like had spoken to everyone else on CLG and ended up trying out for them. And obviously, so yeah, if things hadn't gone so well on Noble, I definitely wouldn't be where I am today.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I know you biggest and most from Noble, right? Because you had done some stuff with Enix, and I had seen you then. And there was some like really heartbreaking moments on Enix.
Yeah.
I remember like I was on the desk one day, and it was when Funball got like was like 6-0 or 6-1, and then lost a fire giant fight because everybody fed like inted around him, and then he just couldn't do anything, and it was like a dominant win up to that point, and then everybody died, and then lost the game. And I was like, what more can Funball do at that point?
Yeah.
It was rough.
We were definitely the kings of throwing back then. I think we usually had a pretty good showing, and then just shit the bed. So that was the story of Enix.
What was the biggest difference going from like Enix to Noble? Like, was it like as far as like team environment, like, so Lobster and Funball have been together forever, right?
Yeah.
And Wowie and Wubbin and Walrus had literally been together forever too.
Yeah.
So was, like, as far as like team chemistry, was there any differences?
Team chemistry, not really. I think it was just like, I think Noble gave me much more, maybe respect's not the word, but it's the word I'll use. I think I got a lot more respect, and Noble knew the position they were in, where that they were not good. They all knew that. They weren't under any impression that they were a good team at that point. And they were ready to listen to any advice and take whatever feedback they needed to improve. So I could just be completely real with that team. Whereas on Enix, there were a lot of personalities and people big-egoed, I guess, but not in like a bad way. Like, they'd earned their egos, but they would be a lot less inclined to listen to feedback that I was giving. But Noble would listen to anything I had to say as a team. And there was no individual player that would, you know, argue back with what I said, unless it was wrong, obviously, but they would take the feedback I gave them. Okay.
So what, as a coach, like, what did you, like, what were some things right off the bat that you kind of brought to the forefront of like attention for Noble? Like, what was, if you had to like distill down like what you gave to them that like made them turn around and everything, what would those things be?
Teamwork and communication. The communication was like abysmal. Moswell would never say a single word. So it would be me popping in every time because I would low spectate delay, and they didn't care if I spoke during the scrim. If Moswell had used an ability or had the ability used against him, or actives used, or he uses actives, he wouldn't communicate it. So I remember like over and over, I just had to keep yelling at him, call your cooldowns, call timers used on you, tell people who's rotating where, and I would have to keep popping in, and eventually, like, just maybe he was getting pissed off. He wasn't actually pissed, but it stuck in, and he started doing those things. And then it came to, like, me telling Wubbin, like, you need to just get more, like, synergy with Wowie kind of thing. You need to work together as a team more. You can't just be going in expecting Wowie to know what you're doing. And then the same with like Wowie's campus, like, you need to let the team know what's happening in the backline, because you're getting fucked and you're just saying help. So that's like, that's actually kind of like an inside joke between me and Wowie, is like, I don't know, like the small text generator, you know, like where you can get tiny text. I'll send him a message just saying help, because he was always like just really quietly in the backline saying help. Or pick me Jingwei, would all he would ever say. Pick me Huyi, pick me Jing. So it would just be communications and like trying to force them to get better teamwork.
It's funny, like the whole like in the backline help. I coached like a Plasma Wolf team this first the combine, and we were literally like, we had like a Terra and somebody else that like excels at like being bullies in the front line.
Yeah.
And they were like getting, I think it was Terra Jing Chen was like who we had. And like they were super focused of going in the front. And then for whatever, like I think they had like a Sirkette that would literally just jump over them and then get ignored. And so like we had Wolf in the back. He's just like, help.
I'm
dead. Like, and they're like, what happened? Like, you didn't say anything. And that was like a big thing in our VOD review, was just like, Wolf, what the hell happened? You didn't say anything. He's like, oh yeah, I guess I should have.
Yeah. Saying what's used on you is very important. I think a lot of teams is definitely something they have to get used to when they're new.
Yeah, and especially like as competitive like grows, right? Because like there's a certain level at Combine and Challenger Cup, whatever, like SML. Like, I guess SML to a lesser point now, but even still, like, God-given talent can take you a long way, right? Yeah. And like just mechanics and everything. But then like we saw it every time we'd have SML, Combine talent, whatever, make it to the SPL, they could have like the best 10 minutes with anybody else.
Yeah.
And then after 10 minutes, it was like, oh, what do we do actually?
Yeah.
Like how do we smite? And like all of those little things with communication and things like that, like really are apparent. And
yeah,
it's kind of like trying to teach traditional sports, right? They go through all these like systems and everything, and they learn it a certain way and like can compensate with certain things. And then you get in like a real system going into like professional stuff, and it's like, the fuck are you doing?
No. Yeah.
All of this is wrong.
Exactly. So
so trying to fix bad habits is and you don't have to name any names. What's like up until, you know, CLG or even including CLG if you want, like what's been like the worst bad habit you've had to try to correct as a coach?
Ooh. I think calling out when you're going to use CC was a big one. And this has like been an issue across like on every team. I think when someone was going to use something, a lot of people will just look for perfect opportunities, and then just take it. So like an Athena taunt, for example, they'll see this perfect opportunity and it has to be in that fraction of a second that they'll do it, but they'll never let the team know I'm looking for a taunt here. So you don't give the team time to react off of what you're doing. And obviously there's going to be times where you can't let people know, because you'll just there'll be that like millisecond where you'll see the perfect five man taunt or something, but you have to be letting the team know beforehand in 99% of the cases what you're trying to look to do, so people can get ready to play off of you. And I think that's been like an issue across every team I've been on, is just the supports not calling out when they're going to be using their things.
Yeah, because I mean, you went from what, big man to Wubbin, Mifflin for a time. I'm looking at Yuko with WoW in the S.
Yeah.
And then Jiggs with CLG. So yeah. I definitely had like a curve up to Jiggs.
Yeah. Jiggs was super talented, but even Jiggs still had that issues occasionally. It was definitely something that had to be brought up. And it's so hard to do, to force yourself to speak when you're not used to doing it. Mm-hmm. It's definitely a hard thing to like get in the mind of doing, because a lot of pros or even Smite players are just used to autopiloting. Yeah. And I think a lot of those CCs are autopilot to all these players.
I could be wrong here, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. That's for the longest time. Like, WoW's had a lot of this like mechanical skill and everything, but I think one of the bigger knocks on him is just quietness.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah. That's what we had to work on really hard in Noble, and he actually got way better at it. Now he's now one of like the most communicative, whatever. ADCs that I've worked with towards the end. It was he actually spoke a lot. He was like kind of guiding things, which was really good. So yeah, ADCs always tend to be quiet though. I don't know why. Yeah,
I can see it. You know, not a whole lot going on in that lane.
Yeah, just left click here, guys.
All right, so then that leads us up to CLG. At the start of season 5, the CLG roster gets announced. You get announced as coach and everything. Super fucking hyped about the squad between Fine OK, Homie, Hurry, Snoopy, Jiggs. You guys seem like a lock for no worse than third, right? Like, I mean, who's going to be able to top you guys' roster between, like, just so much consistency across the board on that roster and talent? Yeah. And then the season kind of happened, and it was like, okay, first, you know, spring, like, oh, they're just getting used to each other.
Yeah.
And summer's like, well, still not looking great. And then fall is like, what the hell happened? It felt like you always got close, and then it never quite clicked. I don't know what happened, but see, this last year just felt like you guys couldn't all get on the same page and like go in one direction.
The biggest issue with CLG was like the biggest issue a team has ever had, I think, I've been on or heard of, was there was just a core difference of understanding of how the game should be played. Certain players thought that we should just be able to play early game and trade out when like that meta was just, you know, hold W, invade. And players thought, half the team thought, like, we can just hold off here. If we just trade out, if they're invading our red, we'll go take their blue. We'll just trade out, and we can pick a late game comp and win. And it was just always back and forth on what everyone thought should be the way to play the game. And when it came down to it, it was foundations of players that you can't change. You can't change the foundation of what you think Smite is. And they couldn't be changed. And that's why we ended up getting Mask. was because we thought he fit the play style that we needed. And I think given more time, we actually could have done a lot better with Mask. We just didn't have that much time to prepare and like, you know, get used to him. Because we went from Homie, who was, he was more passive. He was one that wants to just farm for late game and try and play the perfect game, early game, to just trade out. And then we went to Mask, who was just like full W, nonstop, kill everyone he sees, you know, and it was like a big playstyle difference to get used to. And then due to complications at Worlds, I wasn't allowed to be there to help with picks and bans either. So it was just, it was like, it was a mix of everything. But yeah, you're right, where it was definitely a letdown for the team, where everyone on that team was insane. I think one of the best mechanical players in NA, at least, in their roles individually. And it just sucks that we couldn't come together and agree on how the game should be played.
Yeah, like, now that you're, like, kind of putting that into words, like, yeah, that's exactly, like, I see that. Like, I can see everything from this last year. Like, oh, yeah, it was half the team was split, wanted to do this, and the other wanted to do that. And you guys just really couldn't get on the same page. And how did you guys kind of try to tackle that? I mean, obviously, like you just said, it was like the biggest thing as a coach. And I mean, I don't know if it's been you I talked to this and joked about, but like, you know, as a coach for a team, like 60 to 70% of your job really just comes to being like a psychologist or a therapist, you know, trying to like fix team like to themselves. And then the other like 30 or so percent is really working on the game and everything like that. Is that, did you kind of feel like that?
It was 90%. Therapy work last year. That's where I was actually really lucky to work with CLG. Maybe like publicly people didn't see how much work they put in, but they put in a lot of work. I had like weekly meetings with all the other coaches, so like the league coach, all of their other coaches, and it was really helpful. And they also had a player development lady, and she was really helpful with teaching me on like psychological things to help the team out and therapy kind of related things. And what it came down to was like telling the players like, you kind of have to suck it up. You have to play a style that you don't want to play. This is what we have to do. And then I was the person that kind of had to help them mentally, you know, how to handle with that. So it was a lot of therapy work last year, which I think I did a good job of, but I can't, it still comes down to the player on how they're going to handle playing a style that they don't want to play. So but yeah, it was definitely a lot of psychological work.
So with that, like how was team morale throughout the year? I mean, we've kind of, I've probably with Noble, you had low morale when you came in or so, and then, you know, you left them in a better place than you found them, right?
Yeah.
And then CLG roster, I can't see any points throughout the year. Maybe when you added Mask, but even then, like it seems like morale just kind of probably went down and down and down. And
morale was like an up and down kind of thing. I think when we were doing well, even in scrims, our morale was really, really high. But then during game day, we would just not do what we had done in scrims, and it would just all fall apart, and morale would crash. It was like a really extreme roller coaster, because we would have really, really high highs and then really, really low lows. And it was kind of like almost on a bi-weekly basis on going up and down.
It's kind of like the dig problem, right? Like that squad has like, when it's riding high, they're nobody could touch them, but then they can, they get super low. Like Biggie was telling me a story, like they were at scrims and like they lost a couple scrims in a row, and then Zero stopped playing and he looked over and to see what he was doing, and he was buying his plane ticket back home. It's like, you guys didn't have it that rough, but still, like, You sounded like you guys kind of had your own little demons to fight during the year.
Yeah.
It's just unfortunate. Like, that was not like a wasted year, but a wasted year, you know? Like, so many things could have went better or differently. So many little question marks. Like, what if? Because, I mean, that was such a talented roster. But I think, not to harp on that too much, you know, like, it was still, as a coach, they stuck with you their whole year as a coach.
Yeah.
That says a lot. So your growing year, like you said, you wouldn't have got CLG without having your year of Noble. And now, you know, moving on from CLG into Rival. And your new Rival squad is no slouch. I mean, I know we just said that CLG looked great on paper, but now, like, you got Fino K again. So you've had the rapport with him. Then you get Captain Twig, one of the like prolific junglers of like the Smite history. You get PBM, one of the smartest supports, most like charismatic dudes.
And biggest trolls.
A biggest troll, I think, is like.
Well, Fiennes got a run for his money. I don't think Fiennes is publicly accepted as the biggest troll, but I'd say he's close to Mike.
I hear that a lot. I hear that behind the scenes, Fiennes is a giant troll.
I don't know if you ever saw my tweet. I made it out on CLG, but it's like a picture of Snoop Dogg with like a stupid hat on, and I photoshopped Fiennes' face on it, and it was like my team asking me to be serious for 1 second, and then you know that picture of the stupid hat with Fiennes' face on it. It's like that is perfect. Fiennes, it always sounds troll. Like he's always trolling. Like he'll say something like, "Really good job there, guys," and everyone's like, "Well, what did we do wrong?" And he'll be completely serious, but he just sounds like he's trolling.
I hear that a lot. I have never had like a non-serious interaction with Fiennes though. Like every time he's come on the show, it's been super serious. We are always like actually talking about business stuff, and then you know, like even in DMs and stuff. Like I've never gotten sarcastic troll Fiennes, and like I wanna see this.
It's quite the experience. But yeah.
But
anyway.
I mean PBM publicly at least.
Yeah. The PBM's exactly the same as he is publicly in private. He's exactly the same.
Yeah. I just, the man is a Twitter troll machine. And God, I can't keep up with him.
Yeah.
Then you've got Arkel. Again, just such a mechanically good hunter. I mean, the biggest question mark that it like has paused is Pandacat mid. Yeah. Pandacat as a player, like, you can't knock him.
Mechanically, he's one of the best.
Yeah, I guess like players. We'll start there. Pandacat mid. What happened? What was the driving force there? If you know, like, that is the biggest question mark for me. And if I'm looking at this, I'm like, well, there's like the fail point for this team right off the bat, right?
Yeah.
If Panda can play mid well, league fucked. If he can't, rival fucked, right?
Yeah. Well, Mike and obviously the obvious. Mike and Panda are already going to have really good synergy. Also, Panda has always just been a really aggressive player, but he's also been on players that are really on teams with players that are really aggressive. He's seen a fair amount of mids in his time, and he's obviously going to notice how they're playing, and he can fit their play styles easily. He had the most aggressive player in the world, Baskin, on his team last year. He's going to have learned how Baskin did things. He's going to learn how he called things, you know, and he's going to take the good things whilst also noticing what Baskin did wrong, and then removing those things. So just having like seen all of these really talented mids that he's been with in the past is going to be really helpful for him. On top of him already being one of the best mechanical players in the world, like I said, even outside of the ADC role, he was really good at hitting these like those abilities. He was known for playing stuff like Vulcan ADC kind of thing. Not exactly the most mechanically intensive character, but it's still there, you know, like he's really good mechanically, and it's just picking up these micro things that all the really good mid laners will have, which is like making these perfect rotations or calling exact objective secure, for example, or having all these perfect ward spots. Those are going to be the biggest obstacles that he needs to overcome. But like I said, he's seen so many really, really talented mid laners, Venenu, Baskin, you know, all the others, that he should know or have a general idea of what he needs to be doing. So, and then on the other side with like Captain Twig, is he's a really good teacher. He's a really good teammate, and he will also be able to help him. Twig has been on a team with really, really, really talented mid laners. Twig has been a mid laner himself, so he can give the advice that he needs to. And then I've also been lucky enough to have really good mid laners. Like even Moswell, he's a world champion now. Maybe he was quiet before, but he was always mechanically really good. Lobster is obviously really, really good player. I've been with these really good players. Horrowind, insane player. So we've got all of these players that have been good, have had these good mid laners. And we should be able to give him the information that he needs to become just as good as the mid laners that he's seen. So I'm not worried personally about Pandacat in mid at all.
I think the biggest thing for me when I think about it is just, you hit the nail on the head. Pandacat's an aggressive player, right? And looking at aggressive players who make the switch into mid, you know, it's not the same. So So before you like jump down or laugh or anything, but you know, Gino, right, moving from support to mid, you know, with like a couple weeks worth of practice, maybe, but playing a super aggressive, like, hey, I can do that, and then trying to play, I mean, like he was playing Guardians, right? So playing up further, things like that. So like, it's not a one to one, but definitely playing too aggressive and not being able to back it up. Pandacat also playing a little bit too aggressive, maybe on that. But I mean, the supporting cast I think Pandacat has is probably a little bit better than the than what LG was kind of working with a little bit across the board. But I don't know, like it's definitely like you said, he just played with Baskin, right? So if that's what Pandacat's trying to model himself after, like what can I say? I'll never forget this is like my go to Baskin thing. Was this last year when he played Uller one game and he threw an axe, blinked behind the guy while the axe was traveling. He stunned the guy and blinked behind him and killed him. And I was just like, I didn't know you could do that. Like, like the combo and like this, like hitting like four like different abilities and buttons in the span of like a second. And I'm like, I don't, this guy is unreal. I don't understand.
Yeah.
And so if, I mean, Panda's a really good mechanical player. I think he was like, Pandacat is weird. Like his, like the fame, right? Where he has like at one point been like the guy everybody talked about. And like, even like Wowie's like, is Wowie the next Pandacat?
Yeah.
And then Panda's just like, I think like he kind of cooled off a little bit on like how everybody was like dick riding him a little bit, you know?
Yeah. But
like, he's never fallen off.
He's always been like insane,
right? And so now like I'm thinking like even if he turns into like a rich man's version of Death Panther, that's still a pretty fucking damn solid mid lane, right? If he just plays Hoogie mid, like I believe in that. Uller mid, like I still believe in like your guys' ability to win games at that point, just because like Final K Captain Twig almost seems like an unfair synergy.
Yeah, I still think people sleep on Fine. I'm like the biggest Fine fanboy. I think
I'm a huge
insane.
Fine stan, dude. Like, I think Final K, I think, I'm going to go on the record here, and it's going to like make some people angry. Final K was a better rookie than Aquarius.
Yeah, I don't even think that's comparable. I think Fine was the best by far. And I think he's improving every single time he plays a game. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, just that simple. I think he's the best NA solo laner by far. I don't think it's close. I think the only person that is close to him would be Benji.
Benji at Worlds is a really dangerous monster.
Yeah.
I like it. But I don't know. Fine's kind of in that same role that Captain Twig gets put in a lot, right? Like there's a reason, like I think Twig, a lot of people still kind of like are haunted, like he gets haunted by that support jungle label. Yeah. Where he was just, like, he would play more setup jungles and like he didn't care about getting the kill himself as long as like they stopped somebody and got something out of it. And I feel like Fine also gets a lot of that because he feels comfortable playing those Guardian solo and like can hold his own.
Well, the reason he was playing Guardian solos is because he was forced to, because we didn't want to fight early game. So last year on CLG, that would be why he is an aggressive player as aggressive gets, but he plays everything, you know. I mean, he's known for his Hercules, right? I think that's his most well-known.
Exactly. That was going to be like one of the points I make is like, if I don't see Fine OK playing a shit ton of Hercules now, if you got like with this roster, forget about it. Like Fine OK's Herc is like the thing of nightmares. Like, I'll never forget like every time like he got it his rookie year, he just destroyed people.
Yeah, I think another thing that a lot of people sleep on when it comes to players and player rankings this year is how they are in person. On the other teams, there's a lot of players with egos. I'm not going to name anyone, but there is a lot of players with egos and might not be as easy to get along with in person. But I think everyone on our team is going to be such good friends. Like even Kenny is like, Arcole is making so many jokes and like everyone's just joking around having fun on our team. Even when we're losing scrims, it's like a really enjoyable time throughout the whole time. And I don't think any of that will change when we live together, which I think is a really, really important thing to note. that yeah. maybe a lot of other teams won't be able to experience.
I mean, that's, I have from the beginning, I've said this publicly on Twitter, I've said it on the show, I don't think Pittsburgh Knights sniff a world championship this year.
I think that they're obviously insane players, at all of them. Like, there's a debate or an argument to be made for each of them being the best in their role. And I could understand people making that argument. But I think if they run into too many issues, that team implodes.
And
They will still always be a top five team, I think, no matter what, regardless of if they implode, because the raw talent is just absolutely incredible, you know? But I think that they have a very, very high chance of crashing and burning, and that will ruin them.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many variables, right? To, like, not to get, like, sidetracked into Pittsburgh Knights too much, but, like, I look at that team and I'm like, if Emilsy hasn't matured, that team fails. Because he's the closest thing to being, like, the actual leader for that team.
Yeah.
Like, Deathwalker's never had to be the leader. Votes never had to be the leader. Adapting, Zeros, like, those guys, like, they are a type of leader.
Yeah.
But are they the leader you want? And then so that comes on to Emilsy. And Emilsy has chronically been immature and not, he hasn't grown fully into that well-rounded role as a support player and a leader of the team. And like, everybody says, like, oh, the good thing that Energy kicked off Raffer, right? He wasn't doing the worst. It's like, there's a reason Raffer was with that squad for so long and, like, off the team. Like, he had a very specific role. Like nobody could ego anybody with Raffer around because he'd cut that shit out. That Jeff Hindler is another example of that. Like, those guys who maybe, like, aren't playing at the absolute peak, but have all those intangibles that make the team better than if they weren't there.
Yeah.
That's, like, one of those big things. And, like, I don't think there's enough that could be said. I think you hit, like, a really good point. Looking at this squad, them living together, spending so much time together, there's not anybody on that squad I look at and who's, like, that wouldn't be, like, a good person to live with or, like, hang out with or spend a lot of time with. Yeah. Right? Like, maybe PBM if he gets too trolly, right? Like,
what? I would disagree with that. PBM still, he knows when he needs to stop, you know? Like,
yeah,
he will not just troll unnecessarily. He'll do it when it's funny to do so. He knows his boundaries and his limits.
That's what I'm saying. If he ever loses that, then you get the weird situation.
Well, he's told me so many times, like, if I go over the edge, just fucking tell me to shut the fuck up. Like, I don't think that'll be an issue. Well, everyone will know when to tell him to shut up, you know?
So I think that's another thing. It's like, you've kind of had several teams so far where you've been put in this position where they want, not abrasive, but, like, direct, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, if you're hey, you're fucking up, stop, right? So you can be really direct. You don't have to, like, kind of, like, hey, I think you should probably do this differently. Like, yes, like, doing that, but being able to, like, go in, actually just, like, get to the point and be like, hey, stop doing this. You're, like, you're fucking up right here. Just, you need to change this. And, like, very blunt. That's what I mean. You're a blunt guy who has had teams where bluntness works.
Yeah, exactly.
PBM, I feel like that'll work. Cap Twig, probably. Is this another squad where you foresee, like, that same, like, they appreciate just being blunt, get to the point?
Yeah, within reason. It was kind of the same on CLG, where I could just say what I needed to say. There was sometimes where I would have to, like, maybe walk a bit more on eggshells, you know, but I could still say what I needed to say. But on Rival, I feel like I have any freedom to say, like, at this time you're being a fucking retard, don't do that again. You know?
Yeah.
I think it's just kind of that's the team that they will take the criticism. I think Twig said something today during scrims about there are players that when they get given criticism, they will naturally just push it back. Even if they're taking the criticism, they will push that back aggressively because they don't want to be taking blame. But Twig was like, all the best teams need to be able to take that criticism in and accept it. And I think everyone on the team agrees with that kind of sentiment. So that means to me that I can say what I need to say without them getting their feelings hurt, you know?
Yeah.
As long as it's constructive. I can't just call them stupid for no reason.
Yeah.
But
this I'm so excited to watch this team. Like, just I keep looking at it, right? Like, I've got like a window open up of the whole team, and I just like keep looking at it, like, God damn. Like, this is this is a team that has so much potential. Like, the hands down, I think you guys can do the best. I think you guys are easily top three. There's a couple, like, I have you guys above Pittsburgh Knights for me, just because I don't believe in them. I think they're going to implode. I don't think they have a leader on that team. But you guys, like, you've got Twig, you've got Mike, you've got, like, I don't, is Pandacat a leader? I want to say he is, but I don't know.
He makes calls. Yeah. Twig is still having to get used to it. Like, the calls that are being made, he's like, Panda will be like, hey, we can get this guy in mid, and Twig's like, I don't know, and then they'll do it, and Twig's like, I don't know, how did we kill this guy so easily, I don't know how I didn't see this, kind of thing. Yeah. So yeah, like, maybe not leader, but
this guy you have is Arkel, right?
Yeah, but he's still one of the most talkative ADCs I've ever heard. He still talks a lot, so
there's so much of this team, and I love it, and I want you guys, I think, I don't know, like, the question then, so obviously rival, so you've had, you're kind of coming into like a really beloved team, but not your beloved. Like, right? Does that make sense? Like, there was a very specific group of guys who became beloved for Rival. Do you guys think you'll still have that level of support from like all of the Smite fans, or are they kind of disperse a little bit? You think the majority, there's what? You've got Kalus and Ice on a team, and you've got Vote and Deathwalker on a team. Do you think they kind of split up between Pittsburgh Knights and is it E-United? The other team? E-United.
I'm actually not sure. I think a lot of the rival fans were there for the players. Mm-hmm. But I do think at the same time that this team has a lot of fans. There are a lot of Twig fanboys. There are a lot of Mike fanboys. There are a lot of Fine fanboys. There are a lot of Arkel fanboys. But I'm not really sure how everyone's going to kind of converge between teams, because there's so many new things, you know, like, everyone's on Pittsburgh because of the raw talent, right? Which makes sense. But I haven't really heard of like how many kind of other fans there are in other teams. So I'm actually not sure. It'd be interesting to see how that turns out.
All right. Let's see. What question? Who? All right. So who? I kind of want to ask you about like some like the other teams, like, so since we got on Pittsburgh Knights. What other team do you feel like people are sleeping on the most?
Ooh.
I have my dark horse, but I want to hear yours.
Let me hear yours, and then I won't let it sway me. I already have one team in mind, but
I really like Renegades.
People aren't sleeping on Renegades?
I think they are.
Who? I haven't heard of anyone sleeping on Renegades.
I haven't heard anybody talking up Renegades.
I don't know. I don't think they're slept on. I think they're a really good team. I think all of those players, I mean, me and you are both a Fungal fanboys.
I'm
a Cherry fanboy. The Reddit threads I saw people like them a lot. I don't know. I think people like them.
I just don't think people believe that they, I think like Renegades has an outside shot to like make a world's run. Like that,
I can see
but
that.
I think people like them like as people. I don't think they like them as like actually favorites to win anything, you know what I mean? Like, even Funball's last team, like, they liked SK, but that doesn't mean they thought SK was gonna win.
Yeah. Well, I actually think, and I'm 100% ready to be in the minority, I think that it would be Trifecta is slept on. Yeah. I think Ducky is really, really, really the most underrated player in the entire history of Smite. I think Ducky's insane. I think Ducky is the best player at making rotations and knowing when he can rotate. I don't think anyone's like actually nearly as good as him at doing that. And it can surprise like the mid laner. They'll just be randomly some fucking whatever god he's playing just running at him, killing them because they're just not used to it. I love Wowie. I think Wowie's just super consistent and really good. I think Weakon has always been a really good leader, but I think he's also one of the best early game junglers. And if they can, even if you watched LG, they were always good early game. If they can find a way to translate someone else to lead the late game, they could be a really, really good team. Last Resort, obviously really good mechanically. He's got a lot to learn, and he hasn't had as many good mid laners like Pandacat to learn from, but he's a really, really, really cool guy to hang around with. which I think will help a lot with team environment. You know, all of that. Ionic is obviously super sick as well. I think he's just super consistent. So I think that team is super slept on.
I hear Ionic and all I can think of is Toly.
Don't bring that back up.
Good Lord. No, dude, like last week I did like a whole 5-6 minute rant about how toxic the Smite community is, like to each other and everything. Yeah. Like, oh, I went down a rabbit hole I didn't expect to, and I talked a lot of shit on both sides because I'm just sick and fucking tired of it, man.
Yeah.
Like, better than this, but it keeps happening and I'm so mad. It's funny that you talk up Ducky so much because this last year, Ducky, like I was a Ducky fanboy for a long time. Like Ducky used to come in and like host my show like a bunch of times. Like I was like, I love Ducky, and then like super great player. And then last year kind of soured me on him. I was like, oh, is Ducky washed? Like,
I think Ducky was the best player on SK last year.
I think I would say Fumble, but
no, like, I wouldn't say Fumble. Fumble is too much of an emotional player. He needs the right environment for him to be the best player. If Fumble is happy, Fumble's insane. If Fumble's not happy, Fumble sucks. I'm saying that as a friend. Me and Fumble are really good friends. Like, we've known each other for years. He's like one of my first.
I mean, I'm not exactly disagreeing with you, but I don't know. Ducky, maybe I should go back and watch some games. But like, I was like on the like replace Ducky train. Like, really? I'd like make some sort of change to that team, and they never did. Like, I was like replace, maybe not replace Ducky, but I think Lobster for sure had to be replaced. Like, I don't know. I was looking at those two, maybe even Fails, but I don't know. But if you say Ducky's nuts,
I think Ducky's nuts. And he's one of those players that is awesome to live with. Ducky's so funny. He'll drink loads. He'll hang out. He's funny as fuck. He's such a great guy.
And then Lazbra mid kind of worries me.
That's the biggest question mark to me.
Yeah, because he played a lot of mid, like on stream and stuff, toward like after the year. But then, how is that going to translate? A lot of people are mad that Weakens got the jungle spot over him, but I think that's kind of natural. Weaken is sick mechanically.
Yeah,
and I don't know. He's had a lot of unfortunate stuff happen to his team. Like even LG, like you always say, like you look at LG, they played really well early game. They almost. If it wasn't for like stupid mistakes, they could have took that game one off of Obey. Yeah. They were fighting Obey. They did exactly what you needed to do against Obey, which is like fight them early, punch them in the face, and make them react to you.
Yeah, I mean that's what he's always been good at is his early game. So.
And then they just had Geno and Bobby make a really stupid mistake in mid and give Pretty Prime a double kill. And
yeah, that was definitely not Bobby's strongest showcase that lane.
Even that game where he was like 0-8 on Erlang, I was like, well, every time he's dying, they're getting either a kill or two kills. Like, it was like I could get it. I could get behind him and like, I see what he's doing.
I think he's a good player. I just don't think he played good that lane.
Yeah. I mean, he was playing like I play in my casual and ranked games where like I'm dying, but we're getting kills. So I guess it's working. But all right. So I think we're just getting about at time. I appreciate you coming on. Is there anything else that we haven't talked about you want to hit on? Any shout outs you want to give or thank yous or anything like that?
Well, obviously, thank you for having me on the show. Thank you, everyone, for watching. I know I get on my rants lost for a while. Sorry about that. Sorry if they didn't make sense. But yeah, just thank you for having me. Thank you to Rival. They're actually probably the coolest sponsor org I've worked with. The owner, Tyler, T-Dubs, he's super cool. Awesome to work with. And obviously, thank you to like Cooper and stuff. He gets a lot of flack, but he's like, without Cooper, Smite, the pro scene would be dead. Cooper does so much work. And yeah.
It's not easy to hurt all the Smite pro.
Yeah, he gets a lot of flack, but he does so much work. Imagine talking to like three of me and then there's like 80 of us. Gotta shoot myself.
God. All right. So thanks for coming on. Everybody, thanks for watching this week. We're trying to get interviews lined up. We have a solid date for the year to start with SPL, and I'm hoping once we kind of get closer to that date, you know, interviews can kind of come a lot quicker. Don't know who we're gonna have next week, but it'll definitely be another interview. There's no new news to talk about really, unless something really comes from this whole Combine account sharing thing and we get a ruling on that. That'll probably be the only thing that we really talk about. And if it doesn't and you don't know what I'm talking about, then it wasn't a big enough story to actually cover. So that's it for us. Thanks for watching, everybody. And we'll see you next time around the battleground. Bye.